He went public. I'm just responding to Pope Leo. And you know, his brother is a big MAGA person, and he's a great guy, Lewis. And I said, I like Lewis better than I like the Pope.
The President of the United States says the leader of the Roman Catholic Church needs to stay in his lane. The Vicar of Christ on Earth says it's his job to speak the truth of the gospel and promote peace. Reaction to and analysis of the White House clash with Pope Leo. All of this as the pontiff begins a major apostolic trip to Africa. We have highlights of this all-important visit to the continent experiencing the biggest surge in Catholicism.
He prayed with us every morning. We would have morning prayer together, mass every morning, share some breakfast.
The influence of St. Augustine, the global leader of the Augustinian order, helps us understand the guiding principles that inspire our Augustinian Pope and shares his favorite memories of their interaction.
He has the patience of a saint. I wouldn't. It's not funny.
And we sit down with Pope Leo's brother, John Prevost, at his home parish in Chicago, to learn more about his little brother and the formation that took him from Catholic elementary school to the Papal Palace. EWTN News in Depth starts now.
And to Iran, choose wisely. I pray you choose a deal which is within your grasp for the betterment of your people and for the betterment of the world. In the meantime, the War Department is locked and loaded.
The message of the church, my message, the message of the gospel, blessed are the peacemakers.
Dueling narratives between the Trump administration and the Vatican this week as disagreements over the war in Iran turned from the political to the theological. But hope remains that a fragile ceasefire can turn into a longer truce in the Middle East. Welcome to EWTN News in Depth. I'm Catherine Hadrow. Time is running out on a ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran, an agreement slated to end on Wednesday if a peace deal is not made. But in a surprise announcement Friday, Iran reopened the Strait of Hormuz, a central point of contention in the conflict. Tehran announced on social media the strait would be completely open to all commercial vessels for the remainder of the ceasefire. Iran restricted traffic through Hormuz as the war progressed, driving up the cost of gas and diesel around the world. President Donald Trump quickly thanked Iran for reopening the strait, but also said the U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports will remain in full effect until a peace agreement is made. EWTN News contributor Alberto Fernandez says that blockade puts pressure on Iran's already weakened economy.
It certainly puts tremendous pressure on Iran. Iran cannot in the long term survive that. The question is it a matter of weeks? Is it a matter of months? Would the U.S. be willing to do this for months? But it's a near fatal blow to the Iranian regime if it continues. 90% of Iran's commerce and oil exports go through the Gulf.
The U.S. has turned around at least 19 ships since beginning the naval blockade on Monday. U.S. forces are also now preparing to go after Iran-linked vessels anywhere in the world to add more pressure on Iran's economy. That major move from Tehran over the Strait of Hormuz was in direct response to the newly enacted ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. The 10-day truce went into effect on Thursday. Celebratory gunshots soared over Beirut's night sky as residents cheered the ceasefire. Iran-backed Hezbollah, Israel's target, which has a stronghold in southern Lebanon, did not take part in negotiating the agreement and has not given a clear answer about whether they would recognize it. The truce came into effect less than 2 days after Secretary of State Marco Rubio held historic meetings with diplomats from Israel and Lebanon, the first meeting of its kind in decades. A former defense advisor says the ceasefire could smooth the path to a peace deal between the U.S. and Iran.
The Lebanese-Israel track is now being sort of tended to, separate from the Iran-U.S. track. which is something that the Americans wanted. The Iranians were trying to tie the two tracks together and talk about it as some sort of grand bargain. But it looks like now those talks are going to go on regardless of what happens with the U.S. and Iran.
Hours into the ceasefire, Lebanon had already accused Israel of continuing its attacks on Lebanese villages and violating the truce. Nearly 2,200 people in Lebanon have been killed by Israeli airstrikes since the conflict began in March. 1 million people have been displaced. As one ceasefire begins, diplomats are rushing to ensure another does not end. President Trump has expressed optimism a peace deal between the U.S. and Iran will be made soon, indicating that meetings could take place this weekend, though nothing is yet confirmed. On Friday, Iran said it would not accept another temporary ceasefire. In a press briefing at the Pentagon on Thursday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and General Dan Kane promised the U.S. was ready to hit Iran in full force if a peace deal is not met.
I'd like to emphasize during this pause that the United States Joint Force remains postured and ready to resume major combat operations at literally a moment's notice.
We are locked and loaded on your critical dual-use infrastructure, on your remaining power generation, and on your energy industry.
Amid that fragile ceasefire, another public clash has captured headlines around the world. President Trump has issued a series of public attacks against Pope Leo XIV for continuously and fervently criticizing the war in Iran. But despite the pressure from his home country, the Holy Father has not backed down from his message of peace.
I don't like it. I'm not a big fan of Pope Leo. He's a very liberal person.
What began as a social media post has now become one of the most direct disagreements between a pope and a sitting president in recent history. The controversy began last Sunday night when the president posted a lengthy and sharp critique of Pope Leo on his Truth Social account. Trump writes in part that, quote, Pope Leo is weak on crime and terrible for foreign policy. I don't want a pope who thinks it's okay for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. He then tells the pope to be thankful he was elected because, quote, if I wasn't in the White House, Leo wouldn't be in the Vatican. On Monday, he doubled down on his Sunday criticism of the Holy Father in comments to reporters.
Will you apologize?
No, I don't, because Pope Leo said things that are wrong. He was very much against what I'm doing with regard to Iran.
Pope Leo quickly issued his own response while on the papal plane. He was just beginning an apostolic journey to Africa. When speaking to journalists on his flight to Algeria, the Holy Father said in English that he will not shy away from sharing the gospel.
I have no fear, neither the Trump administration nor speaking out loudly about the message of the gospel. And that's what I believe. I am called to do what the church is called to do. We're not politicians. We're not looking to make foreign policy, as he calls it, with the same perspective that he might understand it. But I do believe that the message of the gospel, blessed are the peacemakers, is a message that the world needs to hear tonight.
Frank Rocha, EWTN News senior Vatican analyst, says it was a bold call out from the Holy Father, who seldom mentions world leaders by name.
I found that very striking and even shocking because it sounded very defiant. Here a pope is speaking with a Chicago accent, and he's using words like off-ramp, and he's talking about U.S. politics. That has much more of an impact.
Leo has prioritized a mission of peace since he first stepped out on the loggia nearly 1 year ago. But since the start of the war in Iran, his criticisms of conflict have become more fervent.
Everyone who knows him, who works with him, says that he's very methodical, very deliberative, very cautious. He's much more vocal. Italian friends of mine said that, remarked on that. They said, you know, wow, he's really found his voice. And I think that's true.
Nearly a dozen bishops and archbishops in the United States have spoken out to condemn Trump's criticism of the Holy Father. Among the first to issue a statement was the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Archbishop Paul Coakley said he was disheartened by Trump's post, writing, quote, Pope Leo is not his rival, nor is the pope a politician. He is the vicar of Christ, who speaks from the truth of the gospel and for care of souls. Some bishops also called out Trump for posting a now-deleted AI image that critics say portrayed Trump as Jesus Christ. The image garnered widespread pushback across the political spectrum. Trump did not apologize for the image, but claimed he thought the image showed him as a doctor. Bishop Michael Olson of the Diocese of Fort Worth, Texas, called the image highly insulting and blasphemous, and said the president owes the Holy Father and Catholics an apology.
I think the president of the United States likes to mix it up on social media, and I actually think that's one of the good things about this president is that he's not filtered.
Other top Trump allies have defended the president and hurled their own criticisms towards the pontiff.
I love the Catholic Church. I just wish they stick to fixing the church because there's issues. I know because I'm a member. And stay out of politics.
A pontiff or any religious leader can say anything they want, but obviously if you wade into political waters, I think you should expect some political response.
Vice President J.D. Vance, who converted to Catholicism, not only downplayed the AI image, saying he believed the president intended it as a joke, but also suggested the Pope should be careful on matters of theology.
If you're going to opine on matters of theology, you've got to be careful. You've got to make sure it's anchored in the truth. And that's one of the things that I try to do. And it's certainly something I would expect from the clergy, whether they're Catholic or Protestant.
The day after Vance made those comments at a Turning Point USA event on Tuesday, Bishop James Massa, chairman of the USCCB's Committee on Doctrine, issued a statement clarifying the church's stance on war. He writes, "When Pope Leo XIV speaks as supreme pastor of the Universal Church, he is not merely offering opinions on theology. He is preaching the gospel and exercising his ministry as the vicar of Christ. The consistent teaching of the church is insistent that all people of goodwill must pray and work toward lasting peace while avoiding the evils and injustices that accompany all wars." Trump directly addressed this statement when holding a press gaggle on Thursday afternoon.
"I'm all about the gospel. I'm about it as much as anybody can be. But I can't allow, as president of the United States of America, I can't allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon."
That bishop who issued the clarification on the Catholic view of just war theory joins us now. Bishop James Massa is the chairman of the U.S. Bishops Doctrine Committee and the auxiliary bishop of the Diocese of Brooklyn. Your Excellency, thank you for joining us. First, your reaction to the news of this week and President Trump's attacks on Pope Leo XIV.
Yeah, you know, when all this was happening here in the United States, all the news reportage on the Pope and the President's statements. The Holy Father was, of course, in Africa on a pilgrimage of peace. You know, what a beautiful event yesterday at St. Joseph's Cathedral in Cameroon, where he gathered with an imam, a Protestant minister, an animist chief, and a Roman Catholic sister. And they all gave testimonies, beautiful, powerful testimonies to peace, followed by the Holy Father's own plea for peace in the world. So this is what fundamentally he's doing as teacher and pastor, trying to make an appeal to the nations to find other ways to resolve these decades-long conflicts.
And we'll have a full report on the Pope's trip to Africa right after this as well. Your Excellency, a number of the president's allies, House Speaker Mike Johnson, Border Czar Tom Homan, among others, have said something this week along the lines of, Pope Leo needs to stay in his lane and not wade into politics. But is Pope Leo being political when he speaks about peace?
You know, it's a peculiarly American problem in a way because of our history of church-state separation and all. No, the Catholic faith pertains to every aspect of life. We can't segregate it, you know, to one area. Obviously, our faith informs our conscience. And every citizen in the United States has to make a decision of conscience when they pull the lever on election day to vote for someone, when they take a stand on the current issues in front of us. And right now, the war in Iran is in front of us. And God willing, the peace efforts now will bear fruit in the coming days. But we have to let our faith inform our view of the world and problems we're currently facing. So there can't be a separation.
And just following up on that, clarify for us, have popes throughout history spoken out against war and on foreign policy issues? Put that into context for us, the Pope's role on the global stage when there's global conflict.
Exactly. You know, what comes to mind is 110 years ago, our Holy Father then was Pope Benedict the 15th. And as World War I was raging and across Europe, the Holy Father then made pleas for peace. He was a promoter of the concept of the League of Nations, the precursor of the United Nations. He saw the slaughter of that First World War taking place, and it led him to a cry of the heart to the leaders of the nations to lay down their arms and find their way to the peace table. Of course, this was a war that was being waged by baptized Catholics and baptized Christians against other Christians. So the futility of it troubled him deeply. And then, you know, in more recent times, Pope John Paul II in the early 2000s took a strong stance on the war in Iraq. Yeah. So Pope Leo was following in the tradition of the great popes of the 20th century who addressed, along with Pope Francis, who addressed issues of conflict around the world.
A great history lesson for all of us. Your Excellency, J.D. Vance is our nation's second Catholic vice president. In comments made at a Turning Point USA event earlier this week, the vice president said Pope Leo needs to be careful when talking about theology. Let's take a listen.
When the Pope says that God is never on the side of those who wield the sword, there is more than a thousand year tradition of just war theory. Okay. Now we can, of course, have disagreements about whether this or that conflict is just, but I think that it's important in the same way that it's important for the Vice President of the United States to be careful when I talk about matters of public policy. I think it's very, very important for the Pope to be careful when he talks about matters of theology.
Bishop Massa, okay, the vice president just raised the issue of just war theory there. So can you give us a brief explanation of what just war theory is? And have Pope Leo's comments been in line with the church's tradition on just war theory?
Sure. I have to say I cringed a little bit, you know, hearing the vice president lecturing the Pope on just war. Of course, it goes back to the early church, St. Augustine, St. Ambrose, in fact. You know, the intent of the just war theory is to establish the criteria for when it is just to go to war. And then once you've established the conditions that allow for that option, then you have to also apply moral reasoning to the conduct of the nation in war. So we have what we call the just reasoning for going to war and just reasoning for the conduct of the country during war. And you're asking questions, is this a last resort defense of the people when an aggressor has caused grave and certain danger? Have all other options been exhausted? Diplomacy, negotiations, etc. And then is there a real chance of success? And the other very important criterion is, will the fighting cause worse evils than the harm that you're trying to stop? So the just war theory is never a blank check for violence. That's the bottom line. And it requires moral judgment, moral reasoning.
And of course, St. Augustine was one of the greatest contributors to just war theory, and our Pope is Augustinian. Your Excellency, one of Pope Leo's comments drawing the most attention is when he said God does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war, but rejects them. And you addressed that in your statement on just war theory this week, writing, a constant tenet of that thousand-year tradition is a nation can only legitimately take up the sword in self-defense once all peace efforts have failed. That is, to be a just war, it must be a defense against another who actively wages war, which is what the Holy Father actually said. He does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war. Bishop Massa, do you mind expanding on that, especially for Catholics who may have been surprised to hear the Pope make those specific comments?
Sure. The Pope is not saying that God doesn't hear the prayers, listen to the prayers of our American soldiers, men and women in the military, or the Israeli soldiers, or soldiers on the other side of a conflict. Of course, God hears everyone's prayers. What he's citing a verse from the Old Testament, Isaiah chapter 1, verse 15. And the context of that verse was that after the Assyrian empire had destroyed much of the kingdom of Judah back in the Old Testament, 8th century, there was a lot of injustice, and violence was being used by the rulers of the country against their own people. And so whenever violence is used unjustly as an act of aggression, then God looks with great disfavor on the one perpetrating the violence. That was the Pope's intention. He's saying, you know, are we the aggressor in this military engagement? Now, of course, he's not ignorant of the tremendous problems that Iran has caused as a state sponsoring terrorism and et cetera. He's very well aware of that. But looking to the conditions for a just war, he has to raise the question: have the conditions met for this to be a justified use of force?
Really important context there. Your Excellency, my final minute with you. Pope Leo XIV, he began his pontificate with the words, "Peace be with you all." And just last week, Pope Leo hosted a peace vigil at the Vatican. Can you reflect briefly on how this theme of peace has been central to his pontificate so far?
Yeah, it was so beautiful. La pace sia con tutti voi, he said, the very first words of the pontificate. Of course, he was speaking the same words that our Lord spoke on the night of the resurrection to the apostles. And I think just as Pope Benedict XV, back at the time of World War I, saw the testimony to peace, the witness to peace as an essential component of his pontificate, so Pope Leo sees the same. As we enter this period in which war is becoming ever more dangerous with, drone warfare and use of AI technology that subtracts human agency from the waging of war. We're living in very dangerous times, and the Holy Father feels deeply that his role as a peacemaker in the spirit of St. Francis, whose 800th anniversary of death we celebrate this year, he has to be a promoter of peace. Mm. And he's doing exactly that in Africa this week, and we will continue to hear from him in a similar way.
Absolutely. Bishop Massa, we so appreciate your time this week. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you. As if pressure from the White House was not enough for any pope to deal with, especially an American one, that was not even the major focus of Pope Leo's week, as Bishop Massa just told us. Rather, an all-important apostolic trip to Africa to meet with literally millions of Catholics there topped his agenda. Over 11 days, Pope Leo is visiting four countries, bringing with him a message of hope. On Monday, the first stop was majority Muslim Algeria, the birthplace of the Augustinian order, then Cameroon, and on to Angola and Equatorial Guinea, all nations where more than half the population identifies as Catholic. EWTNU's foreign correspondent Colin Flynn tells us about the Pope's African trip so far.
On Monday morning in Rome, Pope Leo XIV boarded his ETA Airways flight and embarked on his papal trip to Africa, with four countries ahead to visit. And at 30,000 feet en route to Algeria, the Pope spoke about the importance for him of visiting the land of St. Augustine.
Sono molto contento.
I am very happy to visit again the land of St. Augustine, who also offers a very important bridge in interreligious dialogue. It is truly a blessing for me personally, but also, I believe, for the Church and for the world.
And with that, his two-hour flight landed in Algiers, the capital of Algeria, a country of 46 million people where 98% of the population are Muslim, and Christianity only makes up around 2%. And after the official welcome from the president of Algeria, Abdelmadjid Tebboune, the Pope travelled to the Martyrs Memorial, which commemorates those who lost their lives in the Algerian War for Independence. And in a moment of silence, the Holy Father placed a wreath at the monument before addressing the people in the square.
Let us remember that God desires peace for every nation, a peace that is not merely an absence of conflict, but one that is an expression of justice and dignity.
Later that morning, Pope Leo went to a conference center to meet with authorities, civil society, and diplomats. And in a speech, he stressed the importance of interreligious dialogue.
We must educate people in critical thinking and freedom, in listening and dialogue, and in the trust that leads us to recognize in those who are different fellow travelers and not threats.
In the afternoon, Pope Leo visited the Great Mosque of Algiers, where he was received by its rector, Mohammed Mahoun Al-Qassimi. Taking off his shoes, Pope Leo walked across the mosque, which is one of the most important symbols of contemporary Islam in all of North Africa. The Pope ended his day at the Basilica of Our Lady of Africa to meet with the Algerian people. Inside, he knelt to pray and celebrated Mass with the country's tiny Catholic community. On day two of his official visit to Algeria, he flew to the city of Annaba. Pope Leo is an Augustinian, and so this was a profoundly meaningful visit for him, to stand in the ruins of the ancient Basilica of Hippo Regis, where St. Augustine was a bishop in the late 4th and early 5th century. And with light rain falling down, Pope Leo appeared emotional as he stood there in the ruins of the old basilica. After visiting the archaeological site, the Pope visited some of the residents of the Ma Mason Care Home for the Elderly, run by the Little Sisters of the Poor. There he told the residents that God's heart was not with the mighty and the powerful, but was with them.
God's heart is with the little ones, with the humble, and with them he builds up his kingdom of love and peace.
Then Pope Leo went to the modern-day Basilica of St. Augustine, up on the hill overlooking the city. He celebrated Mass with clergy, religious and pilgrims who had gathered from across Algeria and beyond, where he recognized the historic and sacred ground that they were standing on.
Here the martyrs prayed. Here St. Augustine loved his flock, fervently seeking the truth and serving Christ with ardent faith.
On the morning of day three of this apostolic journey, Pope Leo was back at the airport of the capital, Algiers, bidding farewell to Algeria. The flight lasted just over 5 hours as he flew to Yaoundé, the capital of Cameroon. At the airport, he was greeted by Prime Minister Joseph Dion Newt, before later meeting President Paul Biya at the presidential palace. Later that day, dignitaries and authorities gave speeches at an official event. And in a country that has been so damaged by years of war, Pope Leo used this opportunity to denounce violence.
Behind the numbers are the faces, stories, and shattered hopes of real people. In the face of such dramatic situations, I called on the human family at the beginning of this year to reject the logic of violence and war and to embrace a peace founded on love and justice.
From there, Pope Leo traveled to a children's orphanage where they welcomed him with song and dance. And speaking to the children and the sisters who care for them, he told them not to feel abandoned, that they were a family who supported each other and shared in their suffering. On the fourth day of this African pilgrimage, the Holy Father travelled from the capital, Yaoundé, to the highland city of Bamenda, where crowds of people had gathered at the airport to see him, as he greeted them from the Pope Mobile. From there, he proceeded to St. Joseph's Cathedral, where again, in a place that has been so marked by violence, he talked about the long-lasting damage of war.
The masters of war pretend not to know that it takes only a moment to destroy. Yet often, a lifetime is often not enough to rebuild.
The Pope then travelled back to Bamende Airport, where more than 20,000 people had gathered to celebrate Mass. And in his homily, Pope Leo focused on the hope for the future.
Consolation for broken hearts and hope for change in society are possible if we entrust ourselves to God and God's Word.
On day five, Pope Leo travelled to Douala, Cameroon's largest city and economic capital, where he celebrated Mass with over 120,000 people. And during his homily, he called on them to follow the vocation that God had given them.
Do not forget that your people are even richer than this land, for your treasure lies in your values: faith, family, hospitality, and work. Be therefore protagonists of the future, following the vocation that God gives to each of you.
Reporting halfway through Pope Leo XIV's pilgrimage in Africa, Colm Flynn for EWTN News in Depth.
Once again, EWTN News contributor Alberto Fernandez, who has a very special insight into Pope Leo's journey to Africa, particularly to Equatorial Guinea. Now retired from the Foreign Service, Alberto was the U.S. ambassador to Equatorial Guinea for 2 years, from 2010 to 2012.
I think the Holy Father will find a population, a country which is overwhelmingly Catholic. Equatorial Guinea is not like some of these countries that are, you know, part Muslim, part Christian, or part evangelical, part. It's overwhelmingly a Catholic country, one of the most Catholic countries in the world. It's a country at peace, which is a great thing. It faces tremendous issues in terms of development, social justice. There's oil wealth, there's poverty. So those are the challenges for Equatorial Guinea that I'm sure the Holy Father will address.
EWTN is providing full coverage and analysis of the Pope's apostolic journey to Africa on all of our platforms. We invite you to watch us here or visit the EWTN News YouTube page, the National Catholic Register, or EWTNNews.com. This American Pope, this leading global voice calling for peace across the world and drawing the ire of the White House in doing so, what made him who he is? We spend the rest of this program trying to uncover that when we talk to two of the people on this earth who know him best.
Someone who's as knowledgeable as he is, who's as experienced as he is, and who can relate to so many people just by the mere fact of the languages he can speak and therefore relate to people. This is the hand of God.
We head to Chicago to speak to John Prevost, the Pope's older brother, for insights into what makes his brother tick and what effect he's having on faith in America.
What is he like as a person? How would you describe him?
He has a great sense of humor, very systematic. He was a mathematician.
And the leader of the Order of St. Augustine sheds light on his personal interactions with Robert Prevost and the impact of the teachings of St. Augustine on his papacy. We look at the background of the man who would become Pope when EWTN News in Depth returns.
Our dad would take the Bible out and read Bible stories. We always prayed before dinner. Our parents always, every evening after dinner, prayed the rosary.
The middle son of Louis and Mildred Prevost speaks to EWTN News in Depth about his little brother. He calls him Rob. The rest of the world calls him Pope Leo XIV. John Prevost spoke to reporter Mark Irons late last month at his church in the Chicago suburbs, sitting alongside his parish priest. That was, of course, before the recent controversial remarks by the president about Pope Leo that we just covered. So our conversation did not touch on that, but rather on one brother's insights into the life and perspective of a person he knows so well, who he still speaks to daily, a brother who just so happens to be God's vicar of Christ on earth. Here is John Prevost on the record.
It's not every day that you're sitting with the Pope's brother, John, and his pastor at his parish, Father Ray. Thank you for taking the time.
You're welcome.
We've had about 1 year now of Pope Leo XIV, your brother. What's this past year been like?
Gosh, Nessie, there's a question. Something totally unexpected, or something you have to take day by day, because you never know, in a sense, what each day is going to bring. Sometimes it's always interesting, but it's sometimes sad. It's sometimes you feel powerless of what people are looking for, and they expect me to be able to help, and I can't necessarily do anything for them except listen.
How has your life changed?
In a sense, things are still pretty much the same. But things do happen where there is a difference. I used to be able to leave the front door open. Now I'm hesitant because who's going to come to the door?
Got to keep it closed.
Yes.
What's it like having the Pope's brother as a parishioner? What has parish life been like?
People are intrigued. They're fascinated. They're curious. And I think they try to respect his space. He sits back there, and I think people just, can we talk to him? Can we meet him? Can you introduce him? So quietly I do, to people, and he's very gracious about that. And so
a lot of people come up to you, I'm assuming, and ask you questions, prayer requests.
Right.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Does that become exhausting at some point? Like,
right.
How do you manage that?
I walk away.
You just walk.
I have to walk away. They've been very good here in church. They don't really bother me in church. But at social activities, then I do get it.
Describe your relationship with your brother, the Pope, now. What does it look like? Does it look the same as it did before he became Pope?
I think so.
Yeah?
I mean, people, you'll hear them say, well, who says no to the Pope? I do.
You're not afraid to say
no.
No. You probably always have. Right?
Correct. So I think that's the same. I think it's more long distance now. And it used to be where he would come here. Now, if we're going to see him, we have to go there. So that's probably the biggest change.
But every day you're communicating with him.
Right.
What are those conversations? What do they look like? What do you talk about?
I'm kind of careful because I don't want to necessarily go into church issues that are kept quiet. But one of the first questions I ask is, did you meet anyone famous today? And then, like on Wednesdays, he's got that general audience with the crowds. Yesterday, he said there was like 20,000. I always ask, did you get any gifts?
And you play Words with Friends
mm-hmm.
and Wordle.
Mm-hmm.
Who's better at the games?
It's a trade-off. He beats me in Wordle. I usually beat him in Words with Friends.
And we heard in Wordle, he said he has a new word each time he plays. What's your strategy?
I use the same word every time.
What is it?
Adieu. A-D-I-E-U, because he uses the vowels.
Get all the vowels. I'm sure you get so many questions about your brother, the Pope, but let's talk a little about you and your faith. You were in Catholic schools as a teacher, as a principal. I'm guessing your faith formed you and inspired you to take on that sort of profession and role?
It did. I think somewhere in the back of my mind, it absolutely had to be to see the strength in a Catholic school, the importance of Catholic school education. And I wasn't so concerned about making the big bucks, so I was able to afford to work in a Catholic school. And I just saw the value in it, having gone through it and having student taught in a public school. I saw kind of the difference, and so I always aimed into a Catholic school.
Talk about that. Talk about the value of Catholic education. Is it an important thing for not only the church but society?
I think so. I think that's where values are started, and I worry sometimes that Catholic schools, unfortunately, are becoming too expensive for the average person to afford, and if it's only going to become something for the wealthy people, I hope not. But I see the importance of setting values and of setting Moses' standard of behavior that the Catholic school can do, I think, somewhat in a different way than regular public school education can do.
What would your advice be to somebody who maybe grew up Catholic but has left the faith for whatever reason? Should they reconsider?
I think they are. I've had people come to the door and tell me. I don't know who they are, but they say, I wanted to let you know because of your brother, I'm coming back. A cousin just said that to me this week because of
Rob.
They're coming back. So I think that's happening just because. I think you're seeing that across the country. Mm-hmm. Because of him, people are coming back to church.
That's happening. I was going to ask about that, the impact on faith in this country. You think it will be significant now that we have the first American Pope?
I think so. I commented just this week on how the 5 o'clock Mass is packed. Why all of a sudden?
We do see it in parishes. I've received several phone calls. People say because of his election, because of who he is, we feel called to come back to the church.
We've heard a lot about his gifts and talents and would make him well-suited for this role, but you know him in a particularly unique way as his brother. What are some of those other things that you know about him intimately that would make him great to be this leader of our church here?
Well, to keep it in the area of faith, he has the patience of a saint. I wouldn't. It's not funny.
Have you seen it? Have you seen it?
I don't. I mean, he does. If you ask me a question, which you are doing, I come out and give you an answer. He would take a lot of time to think about it before he responded. And therefore, it's a whole lot more deeper in perspective than mine off the top of my head.
Pope Leo, your brother, has a lot of responsibility now. His flock is the world, and there are many people suffering in different areas of the world. How do you think he takes on this sort of responsibility and care for so many different groups of people suffering in different ways?
One of the ways is if you listen carefully to the things he says. He talks about important issues and the way we should take on some of these issues. I think if you also look, he hasn't taken a lot, but if you look at the places he goes, he's going to some of these places that are having difficulty.
Do you think his heart is kind of with any particular groups of people? I mean, there are so many different groups, so many different needs.
Disenfranchised, ignored. I think that would be how he looks at it.
He always wanted to be a priest, is that correct?
Yes.
From a young age, that was...
We always knew that.
Do you think he was inspired? How is he inspired to follow that path?
I don't know.
Was it a particular priest or anybody at the parish, do you think, that something he saw?
It could have been, but I can't look into his mind and say that's what did it. But it was at such a young age, I don't know that anyone in particular would have had that strong of an influence on him. Maybe it did.
Did you or your brother ever consider priesthood? Your older brother, Lewis?
No, he kind of knew he was going to go into the Navy. And I was just sort of a rolling stone.
Yeah. Did you always know you were going to be a teacher? Or did you
I
have
did.
Other...
That was kind of, yeah. I think I've told this story before. When he was maybe first grade or second grade, one of the moms across the street did say to us when we were out there playing, you know, he's going to be the first American Pope.
What were those years like growing up in your family?
Probably like anyone else's, you know, it was a mom and dad, three kids, three boys. What did that do in the house? You know, it was regular, go to school, come home, do your homework, go out and play, come in, do your studying, go to bed, and then just repeat that. We were all altar servers. For some reason, our mother insisted that we do Friday at 6:30 in the morning and serve that, which we weren't necessarily all that happy with. You do what your mother tells you. We were choir. Rob was in Cub Scouts. We were all altar servers.
Anything stand out? Any memories?
Well, one time we were building a shed in the backyard, and Rob fell through the roof.
Really?
Yes.
Not great with
No, it was just part of the wood was rotted. Okay. And because we were using old doors from the house for the roof. And
fell through the roof.
It's just does stuff like that. And then when he was in second grade, I was in third grade, and Marty was in fifth. This is a local show, so probably don't know about it. We were on Bozo's Circus.
Really?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Rewind that. What? Bozo's Circus?
It was a kids program produced by the Chicago local channel, WGN. And it was an everyday show. And tickets were hard to get, but one of the guys who was in the WGN band taught music to the kids at my dad's school. He was superintendent of schools, was a teacher there. So he said, if you kids ever want to go to Bozo's Circus, well, we jumped at the chance because you're on
all
TV.
All three brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was, we didn't lose any school time because it was during a holiday. But there's something no one knows. You have the scoop.
We got
to
find that footage.
Yes, it's there.
Where did you learn your faith from? Where did that come from?
I think it starts in the home. And then it just gradually would grow and develop. But I think it starts in the home.
What did that look like, the faith being handed down from your parents?
I know periodically our dad would take the Bible out and read Bible stories. We always prayed before dinner. Our parents always, every evening after dinner, prayed the rosary.
Has Catholicism changed since you were a kid growing up? Has the church changed?
The basic faith itself, I think, is probably the same. But how we respond to it or live it, how we live, I think that changes.
John Prevost graciously gave Mark more of his time. You can watch their entire half-hour conversation on the EWTN News YouTube page.
My favorite memories are walking into the chapel. He was always in chapel before any of us. But walking into the chapel and seeing him praying.
And next, a talk with Father Joseph Farrell, the prior general of the Order of St. Augustine, about the Augustinian teachings, mindset, and way of life that direct the Pope in his stewardship of our Catholic Church. That interview when we return. The first stop of Pope Leo's trip to Africa, the country of Algeria. And here, an image from the city of Annaba, which centuries ago was the ancient seaport home of St. Augustine of Hippo. Look closely, traveling with the Pope is the prior general of the Order of St. Augustine. Father Joseph Farrell and Pope Leo have known each other for decades. Father Farrell is serving in a position that Robert Prevost himself held for 12 years, from 2001 to 2013. In this role, both men ensured fidelity to Augustinian traditions, directing the apostolic, spiritual, and communal life of the order. Before traveling with Pope Leo to Africa from his base in Rome, Father Farrell spoke about the impact of their Augustinian roots with Hannah Brockhaus, deputy Vatican editor for EWTN News.
My understanding when I first joined the Augustinians, I knew them as teachers. Really, I knew them working in high school and at the university. And that's what really attracted me to the Augustinians, that I saw them working together in the field of education. After entering is when I learned that the Augustinians do so much more, right? Along with teaching, we're in pastoral ministry, we're in counseling, advocacy work, missionary work. And so my eyes were open to realize that the Augustinians were not dedicated to one particular ministry. And through our formation, I learned that even from the beginning, when we were established as the Order of St. Augustine in the year 1244, we were established to respond to the needs of the world and the church at any particular moment in history. So that's what we do. We respond. We have to pay attention to the signs of the times. You know, we listen to what's going on in the world, and that's how we continue to serve.
We have a pretty well-known predecessor as prior general, right? With Pope Leo, then Robert Prevost. How have the two of your lives and vocations intersected?
When I was a novice, so many years ago now, we're talking about the mid-1980s, we had our novitiate was an inter-circumscriptional novitiate, inter-provincial novitiate, and it was in Racine, Wisconsin, about an hour's drive from Chicago. So I remember as novices, we would go down to Chicago to visit some of the newly ordained priests of the province of Our Mother of Good Counsel in Chicago, and Robert Prevost was one of those newly ordained priests. So we got to meet and spend some time kind of learning what it meant for them to go through formation and what they're going through now is kind of new ministers in the church. That's my first memory of meeting Robert Prevost at that time. And then had opportunities to interact with him when he was provincial in Chicago. We would have some national youth and young adult gatherings in various places. And I remember one particular that we had at Merrimack College in North Andover, Massachusetts. And the provincial, Robert Prevost, came with a group of young people because he was really interested in helping them to form themselves as Christians and coming to an understanding of who they are as a young person, as a member of the church. Then many years later, as prior general, I was here as a student. We worked on various commissions together for Augustinian spirituality or work with the laity and continuing that work with the young people.
Do you have any favorite personal memories with him?
There are a lot of great memories. Some of them are more recent ones when he was assigned back here in Rome as the prefect for the congregation for bishops. He didn't live with us in community here, and yet I saw it was a real priority for him to continue to maintain that sense of connection with community. And so he prayed with us every morning. We would have morning prayer together, Mass every morning, share some breakfast. He would go off for his work in the dicastery, and then would come back and have pranzo, have lunchtime with us. He found it to be a priority, which it was a priority for us also. So my favorite memories are kind of walking into the chapel. He was always in chapel before any of us, but walking into the chapel and seeing him praying.
What is he like as a person? How would you describe him?
He has a great sense of humor, very systematic. He was a mathematician at Villanova University, and that follows through with him. Man of prayer. I wouldn't say he's timid. Someone once asked me if he's timid. I said, no, I don't see him as timid. Perhaps a person who needs time to recharge his batteries when he's with big groups or preparing to be with big groups, needs that personal time, which we all do in a sense, you know, of recognizing, all right, Lord, I need to listen to you for a little bit before I go out and speak or talk on this particular subject. So that's the man that I know.
You mentioned the importance of community for him, and of course he found that in the Augustinians. I wonder how his time as a religious priest, as an Augustinian, how that might be influencing his papacy now and how he is as Pope. What are your thoughts about that?
We are founded as Augustinians to be a community based on mutual sharing of everything and taking those opportunities to help each other along the way to God. Sometimes that means fraternal correction. Sometimes it means just being present to listen. But most of all, to share material possessions, but also share what's going on in the inner stirrings of my soul, my life. And that was part of our initial formation as Augustinians. Any Augustinian throughout the world is going to have that initial formation. It's based on the rule of St. Augustine. Pope Leo also had that. And so I don't think he can help but bring that with him to his papacy now. Especially with the themes, the global themes of peace, of bringing divisions together. You know, his motto, in the one, in Christ we are one, right? It brings us together to be one, recognizing our diversity, recognizing our differences. But the goal is to come together as one.
We're coming up on a year since Pope Leo XIV's election as Pope. I was wondering if the order has seen an increase in interest, maybe in people interested in vocations. Has there been any kind of Leo effect following his election?
The Leo effect, that's, we use that term also. So yeah, on May 8th of 2025, when Pope Leo came to the Loggia and announced to the world that he's a son of Augustine, an Augustinian, you know, certainly our chest pushed out a little bit. We were very proud of that and still are. Our sisters are proud of it. Our friars are proud of that. And it that small phrase brought, in a sense, a certain spotlight on the Augustinians that had not been there before. We were the worker bees, keeping our heads down, doing our business. But now there's a spotlight that we're still getting used to. It's uncharted territory for us. And we're seeing a growth in interest. People are learning more about not only the Augustinians, but people researching who St. Augustine is. Perhaps they studied Augustine in philosophy or in a theology class, but want to know more about him. So we are experiencing, if you will, that Leo effect of at least candidates expressing an interest to know more about us. Who are you? What do you do? Where are you? What does it mean to have a vocation to be an Augustinian friar or an Augustinian sister? And so our vocation directors are working a lot harder than they had in the past. They're working together with each other. And we are seeing an increase in candidates, which means there's an increase in that accompaniment that needs to take place as discernment. No matter what the vocation is in life, people have to go through a discernment period. And so that's what we're working with now. It's only been a year. We hope it continues for a long time.
There is much more of Hannah's interview with Father Joseph Farrell. To watch the entire conversation, go to the EWTN News YouTube page. And that's it for this edition of EWTN News in Depth. I'm Catherine Hadrow. We hope to see you again next week for more news and reports important to your Catholic life. Until then, God bless.